What if happiness isn't something we find within ourselves, but something we discover in particular places? This question haunted Eric Weiner, a self-described grump and former NPR correspondent who had spent years reporting from the world's most troubled regions. After consuming countless self-help books claiming happiness lies inside us, he wondered, what if they're wrong? What if happiness is actually out there, in specific locations with particular cultural conditions? This radical premise launched Weiner on a year-long global expedition to uncover the world's happiest places, not tourist paradises, but nations rich in the ingredients of well-being. His journey took him from the scientific happiness databases of the Netherlands to the contentment of Switzerland, from the wealth of Qatar to the spiritual mindfulness of Thailand, and through many places in between. Along the way, he discovered that happiness takes radically different forms across cultures, challenging our most fundamental assumptions about what makes life worth living. In Rotterdam, Professor Ruud Veenhoven's World Database of Happiness pioneers contentment measurement through straightforward self-reporting. The data reveals consistent patterns. Extroverts outrank introverts in happiness, married people surpass singles, and religious service attendees score higher than non-attendees. African nations and former Soviet republics show lowest happiness levels, while temperate climate countries rank highest. Most people globally report happiness levels between 5 to 8 on a 10-point scale, despite cultural focus on misery. Dutch happiness correlates with their tolerance, particularly regarding drugs, prostitution, and cycling. Veenhoven focuses on documenting happiness variations across populations. Switzerland, among the world's happiest nations, presents a paradox with its high suicide rate, explained by different factors affecting suicide prevention versus happiness creation. Swiss contentment stems from strong local roots and extraordinary community trust. Their happiness may also derive from boredom, which Bertrand Russell deemed essential to contentment. A Swiss saying captures it perfectly. Maybe happiness is not feeling like you should be elsewhere, doing something else, being someone else. They demonstrate that choice enhances happiness only when meaningful. Flying over the Himalayas toward Bhutan reveals a kingdom that pioneered gross national happiness, GNH, as its measure of success. While Western nations focus on GDP, Bhutan's framework emphasizes sustainable development, cultural preservation, environmental protection, and good governance. In 1972, King Jigme Singye Wangchuck declared that gross national happiness is more important than gross national product. This philosophy translated into concrete policies, limiting tourism to preserve culture and maintaining strict environmental protections despite economic pressures. Karma Hura, president of the Center for Bhutan Studies, explains that happiness is inherently collective. If you're happy and everyone around you is suffering, that's not happiness. This challenges Western individualism's approach to personal fulfillment. The Bhutanese perspective embraces impermanence. As my guide Tashi says, everything changes, nothing stays. This makes us happy because we don't cling. On my final evening over Red Panda beer, I experience an unusual calm, accepting all moments as they are, neither good nor bad, but simply right. Qatar, the world's wealthiest nation per capita, provides citizens $29,000 monthly, free health care, education, and housing subsidies. Yet this prosperity hasn't brought happiness, instead creating a society where citizens are the minority and consumption dominates culture. A Qatari businessman observes, "We have the hardware of happiness, but not the software." This demonstrates hedonic adaptation. Humans quickly normalize improved circumstances, returning to baseline contentment. Qatar shows how wealth beyond basic needs yields diminishing happiness returns. Nations with equitable distribution consistently report greater well-being than those with concentrated wealth. The lesson became clear. Ambition had become my deity. In this faith, the office is your temple, the handbook your scripture, and coffee your ritual drink. ambition punishes the unfaithful, but reserves its cruelest fate for devotees who realize too late they've served a false god. Jared Bibler, a hedonic refugee from Boston, fell in love with Iceland for its natural wonders, community spirit, and social openness. From geothermal hot springs to children walking safely to school in darkness and casual connections with parliament members. This openness creates rumor, a cultural spaciousness enabling reinvention and risk-taking. Failure isn't feared, but embraced as essential to growth. Iceland's happiness paradoxically stems from seeming disadvantages. Harsh weather builds togetherness, a small population nurtures trust, and creativity thrives without fear of failure. At Cafetar Cafe, I meet Ragnar, an artist who challenges the stereotype of the tortured creative. Local artists maintain their joy while cherishing their melancholia, reflecting modern psychology's view that happiness and unhappiness exist on separate spectrums. Nietzsche said societies should be judged by how they transform pain into value. Faced with brutal climate and isolation, Icelanders chose to create meaning from hardship rather than surrender to despair, transforming their challenging environment into a source of happiness. Moldova consistently ranks as Europe's least happy country. Its capital, Chisinau, reflects this reality, with gray Soviet-era apartment blocks dominating the landscape and neglected pre-Soviet buildings. Even the McDonald's looks depressed. My Russian tutor, Luba, embodies Moldova's tragic history. Once prominent in the Soviet construction ministry, she lost everything in the collapse. Now she survives on a $40 monthly pension, her daughter works in Turkey as a dog hairstylist, and her son works construction in Russia, unseen for a decade. Moldova's unhappiness transcends poverty. The Soviet era destroyed social trust through its network of informants, while post-Soviet corruption eroded faith in institutions. This created learned helplessness, the belief that personal actions cannot improve outcomes. Two lessons emerged. Not my problem is a mental illness, as others' problems eventually become our own. And poverty often masks deeper issues. Moldova's true tragedy lies in its culture that undermines trust and friendship, rewards deceit, and eliminates hope, whose absence brings grief almost equal to death itself. After exploring Iceland's noon darkness, Qatar's solid heat, Switzerland's functionality, and India's unpredictability, what have I learned? Money matters, but less than we think. Family and friends are crucial. Envy and overthinking are toxic. Trust and gratitude are essential. Happy countries succeed in their own unique ways, like carbon atoms forming either diamonds or soot, depending on their arrangement. Places thrive when they achieve the right balance. Perhaps love matters more than happiness itself. Most would choose a meaningful life over an empty, happy one. Misery serves its purpose, alerting us to danger and sparking imagination. We flourish in imperfection, not paradise. As they say, a lifetime of happiness would be hell on earth. Karma Yora said it best, happiness is 100% relational. Our well-being is inseparable from others. The geography of bliss isn't just about finding your perfect place, it's about creating communities where happiness can flourish. The most important journey may not be across continents, but across the street, connecting with those around us.